This podcast may contain adult language, adult situations, and some movie spoilers, so listener discretion is advised.
You know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this?
Cool?
Jack Burton, me.
You're a bluebird. You're a brownie. You're a Girl Scout cookie.
He doesn't know how to use the three seashells.
I used to love Doggy Chow.
I used to love Doggy Chow, too.
Want a date? Going out? Looking for some action? Need some company?
This is a snakeskin jacket. For me, it's a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom.
It's not important, okay? You're not important. Get used to it.
Baby, you are gonna miss that plane.
Welcome to the Cinema Recall Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a newish episode of Cinema Recall. I am the Vern. Thank you very much for listening. Okay, so this episode is not actually new. It was recorded many years ago, back when Cinema Recall was part of the That Moment In podcast network, and I brought up in a whole bunch of podcasters from that network to be on Cinema Recall, but there's no longer shows on that network. Still check it out. It's a great review site, thatmomentin.com. Greatly recommend it. But on this episode, I brought in my good buddies, Daniel Lackey, who now hosts Musically Ignorant over at Rabbit Hole Podcast, Stephen Palmer and Elwood Jones, who now hosts Asian Cinema Film Club, and Cam Lowe, who also joins Edward Jones for the Movies and Tea podcast. And I brought these people all together with me to talk about our favorite moments in movies. We talk about moments in movies that make us cry, and moments that make us scared, and we talk about moments that get us turned on and aroused. And it was a really fun show. I've had this episode in our archives for a while, and I'm going to give it to you now because we do not actually have a new episode for you. Originally, I was going to bring on Kaylee from Once Over with Kaylee to talk about Howard the Duck, but scheduling got messed up because I got scheduled to work, and we're not able to make that episode work. And I'm sure you're asking me, hey, Vern, where the hell is Ashley? When is Ashley going to come back on to the show? And she will be. It's just that our schedules are not in line with each other. So, like, when she's free to do a show, I'm at work. And when I'm free to do a show, she's at work. So, it's just never our paths have not been able to match up, but they will. Thank you too much to our Patreon supporters. Again, patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. I'll give shoutouts at the end of the episode. But right now, we're going to play a quick ad spot from a great podcast show, and I'm going to do one right now from In Session Film. In Session Film, hosted by J.D. Duran and Brendan J. Cassidy. They are really great cats. I love listening to them. They are way more articulate and way more intelligent when it comes to movie reviews. And also, big shout out to Women in Session. Big shout out to them because they just did a whole episode on Emma Stone. They did a whole episode about Emma Stone, and they took my suggestion. So yeah, quick shout out right now to Jalen and Kristen and Amy and Will for doing that episode all about Emma Stone. Go to InSessionFilm.com and listen right now. Great times. We're going to play an ad spot from their podcast, and then we're going to get into our episode talking about our favorite moments in film. But I've dabbled on long enough, folks. I gotta go. I love you all dearly, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye. I should also let you know, too, that since this is an older episode, I was using a different microphone, so it doesn't sound all that great, and I think we recorded using Skype. So, yeah, you'll hear, and it's going to sound, voices are there, but it's going to sound a little hollow and strange because we had different technology, but it's still good. You'll still enjoy it. All right, that's it.
Hello, everyone. This is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week, we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah, I don't buy it. That's just how it
works. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special episode of Cinema Recall Podcast. I am your host, The Vern. And this is a very special episode of Cinema Recall because we have with us pretty much the whole That Moment In podcast network here. And I'm very excited to have with us Kim Lowe from Game Warp Podcast. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
We have Daniel Lackey from TV Good Sleep Bad.
Ahoy, ahoy.
We have with us Stephen Palmer from the Asian Cinema Film Club. Hello.
Hello, hello.
And, of course, the host of all those other three shows as well, Mr. Elwood Jones.
Hello.
Yes. Thank you all for being on this episode with us. Very excited. We're actually going to be talking about first moments in movies. All right? We're going to do a show like this every couple months where we talk about favorite moments in movies. Maybe we'll even do, like, worst moments in movies. But since it's the first episode of this, I really want to get into, like, our first moments in movies, all right? Like, the first time we laughed at a movie or we cried. But I'm only going to do three categories here because we have, like, a lot of guests here. And we're going to be covering three. We're going to be talking about saddest moments in movies, sexiest moments in movies, and we're going to start off the show by talking about our scariest moments in movies. And the first time we really got scared during a movie, all right? So, I don't know where we're going to go with this right now, but I'm going to pick at random. And why not? Let's go with you, Elwood. What was the first time you ever got scared during a movie?
The first noticeable time I got like, truly terrified. Because obviously I've been scared watching other things, like, obviously, like, Psycho and various other sort of horror movies when I was coming up. But the first time I was, like truly terrified would be watching James Cameron's Aliens. And I can actually pinpoint, like, the exact moment, because I'd never seen Aliens, so I'm going into this film completely blind. And when we got the Ripley dream sequence where she thinks she's going to have the chest burst to come out of her stomach, and it's, like, so much more... You see it go, like, so much further than any other chest burst sequence in the whole franchise, but that absolutely, like, terrified the hell out of me, because I had no context of what the hell's going on. It's just, like, she's in a hospital bed, and then suddenly these things coming out of her stomach. And I think I watched it up to the bit where Newt's brother has the chest burst to come out of him, and I was just like, no, I'm done. and I didn't actually return to it, like, years later. But, yeah, that was... I would say that was the moment that, like, really still sort of stands out as, like, the first moment I was, like, terrified. I mean, there's other things that have always terrified me since. I mean, like, because of Jaws, I don't like swimming in the ocean.
Yep.
I mean, for some reason, that still stuck with me. I will swim in the ocean, but I'm not keen on it. So.
Yeah. I'm in a pool, and I still get freaked out, okay?
Yeah, The pool does it for me. And the deep end, when it's like you can't really see the bottom, I think about Jaws, and I'm like...
and I can't ride on rafts anymore. I don't know why it is, but I just cannot go on those rafts, all right? Especially if I'm at a beach, at a lake, no.
Creepshow, you must have been scared by Creepshow 2.
I have not seen Creepshow 2 yet.
Huh.
I see the first
about
one.
This is a sort of anticipation of being scared by Creepshow 2.
Okay. I've seen, like, gifs from Creepshow 2, but I've never actually watched it. So I own the first one, and the second one is something that I will definitely check out there. But no, that is definitely a great choice there with Aliens and the chest bursting. Because I'm the same with you too, Elwood. I have not seen Alien at that time. My first movie I saw was Aliens. So yeah, that was definitely a really freaky as hell moment in there. I think the most freakiest moment is when they're kind of stuck with that facehugger and they're locked in by Mad About You's Paul Rudd. So yeah, that was freaky as hell.
I think, well, there's something very key about comedians playing really good psychopaths.
Yeah.
Just look at Robin Williams. Robin Williams does really good crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, 1 hour photo? Oh yeah, definitely, man. All right, good choice there. Let's go with you, Lackey. What would you say is your first time you've been scared at a movie?
The first time I really remember being scared by a film was Poltergeist, the original. And it's not one of the scenes that people usually cite when they talk about Poltergeist. They usually talk about the clown or they talk about the tree. And for me, the scene that absolutely terrified me was the scene where one of the like junior Ghostbusters, I think his name was Marty, goes into the bathroom and peels his own face off.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And that really got me, and I remember that scared me to the point where I could not sleep at all that night.
I think it's funny that you have to say the original Poltergeist. It's always just Poltergeist. There is
there's a remake out
there. Not.
There is. Trust me, I've seen it. I've wasted money on it.
No.
And I don't want anybody out there thinking that I was scared by whoever the guy was who played the Craig T. Nelson character saying, "Well, who keeps a box of clowns?" But yeah, actually, who keeps a box of clowns is a running joke with the friend I saw the Poltergeist remake with. So, you know, we have to accept that there was a remake. It wasn't very good, but it had a box of clowns in it.
What is it about the Poltergeist movies that in each one there was like that one surreal scare? Like, I totally agree with you, like, that was absolutely terrifying because it comes out of nowhere, the guy pulling his face off, and it's so sudden. And then in the second one, you've got the weird monster in the bottom of the bottle of beer, which I still get freaked out that that's going to happen to me one of these days. And then you've got the weird, you've got the girl coming out of the pool of slime in the third one. There seemed to be like this one really surreal scare in each of the three films. And I never understood why they always seem to like have this running theme.
I never actually saw the sequel, so...
Oh, two's good.
It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I got everything I needed to get out of the Poltergeist, the first one.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm going to leave it there. I had the same attitude towards The Matrix and Parts of the Caribbean. Everything I need to get out of that, I think
I am kind of curious, Lackey, like, after you saw that moment with the guy ripping his face off, how long did it take before you were able to actually watch the movie again?
I think the next time I don't think I actually sat down and watched the movie all the way through again until, probably about 5, maybe 6 years ago.
Okay.
There was a, they ran it at a 24-hour Halloween and Horror Movie Marathon, and that was literally the first time I'd seen that scene. And I saw it in a theater. When I was like eight, I saw it on VHS. But you know, at this point, it was on a theater. It was an old film print.
Okay.
And I remember, I'm just sitting in this old movie theater in Chicago, and my as I feel this scene coming, you know, closer and closer, I just feel how, you know, my nails tighten up on the armrests.
Okay.
You know, but yeah. No, it really took me, this was about 80, I think came out in 82, and I think I rewatched this. I think this was, like I said, probably about 5, 6 years ago, so it took me about 30 years to be able to watch it all the way through again.
Okay, fair enough, man. There are movies like that take me a long time to actually watch again, so I totally get it. Good choice there, Poltergeist, guy ripping his face off. I love it. Now, the fact that you were scared for a long time, Lackey, I don't love that, but that was still a great scene to talk about. Let's go to you, Kim. What was the movie that scared you when you were a kid? Like, the moment that scared you in movies?
Mine is gonna be not such classical choices. mine is actually Scream. Just because when I watched Scream, I grew up in a really protected family, so they never let me watch a lot of horror films. So I watched this at, like, summer camp when, like, some of these guys, like, these high school guys were like, oh, let's watch this film. And then the opening scene was with Drew Barrymore. And when she has the wrong answer and then the guy gets, like, his stomach slit open and then his intestines fall out, I was like, ugh, so disgusting, you know?
Yeah.
And then I tried to hide it because, you know, it's all these dudes, you know, that were there. And I was trying to be like, oh, you can see, I was like, oh, Kim, you're not scared? And I'm like, it's just blood. Everybody has blood.
Yeah, so you try to play it off.
Like,
you try to play
I'm,
it
like,
off.
Shaking under the table, and I'm like, oh, that was so disgusting. It's so scary.
No, that is a good moment right there, too, because the way it kind of builds up tension and suspense there, right when Drew Barrymore is on the phone and she just says,
Hello?
Why don't you want to talk to me?
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
I only eat popcorn at the movies.
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters?
Yeah.
What's yours?
Guess.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that the one where the guy had knives for fingers?
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Freddy, that's right. I like that movie. It was scary.
Well, the first one was, but the rest sucked.
So, you got a boyfriend?
Why, you want to ask me out on a date?
Maybe. Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said? What? Hello?
Look, I gotta go.
Wait, I thought we were gonna go out.
Nah, I don't think so.
Don't hang up on me.
Yes?
I told you not to hang up on me.
What do you want?
To talk.
Well, dial someone else, okay? Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch. If you hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand? Yeah.
Is it some kind of joke?
More of a game.
I think that's the best thing Wes Craven ever did, the first 10 minutes of Scream.
Yeah.
I think the rest of the film is, and the series, you know, descends into parody and self-awareness. But that 10 minutes, I remember seeing that in the cinema and I was crapping my pants. I guess it was just, you know, someone on top of the game. The genius was, you know, they killed off the headline star. And I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, no, Scream, definitely a classic opening, definitely one of the most classic openings of any horror movies. I would compare the opening of Scream to like the opening of Jaws. All right, very iconic moment, sets you in that tone space right away. I love it. So like after like summer camp, did you not watch any other horror films, or did you wait for a little bit, or?
Summer camp was like, let me think how old I was. I think the next movie after that that I saw was probably the Ring remake.
Okay.
And I watched that in the cinema, and let's just say the friend who went with me lost the feeling in his arm because I was grabbing it so hard without knowing.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah, no, that was the next time. I don't remember how many years after. Yeah, it was a while after.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. All right. Definitely your choice there with Scream. Yeah, like, do I have nothing to say about that? We all pretty much like that. Let's go to you, Steven. What was the first time you got scared out of flick?
Well, actually, what I was going to say was the face being ripped apart in Poltergeist, which you may have heard my jaw drop to the floor when Lackey brought it up. Luckily...
that was just old face on the parts.
And that's why I was very quiet when he was saying that. I thought, oh, bloody hell, typical. But it's all right. I have a second option. I was a real scaredy cat as a child, right? So even though now I love horror movies and I've watched loads of really grim stuff, but when I was younger, I was terrified of anything vaguely scary, right? You talk about being scared of swimming pools and things like that. I was too scared to go to the toilet when my parents had watched Jaws downstairs just for hearing it. I was terrible. I remember seeing Halloween 3 and being terrified of just snakes writhing around.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The very first time I was actually can remember being like terrified of what I saw was in the cinema in 1982. My dad took me to see Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And when Khan puts those things into Chekhov and the other guy's ears, I mean, it's an out of... There's nothing else like it in the entire series. I reckon I was 8 or 9 years old at the time. I don't know how he'd take me to see this film. And out of nowhere, they put this little insect thing into their ears and the screams and the things like that. And that was the first time I can remember being absolutely terrified in the cinema. Although it's a moment completely out of context with the rest of the series.
I think it is just that noise they made that made it scary. And I rewatched it recently... because a few of my friends have it, and we watched that, and that part still just makes me cringe and makes me feel uneasy. And you're right, in an otherwise really great action space movie, the Scream did not sound like that, the sneeze right there, but they're pretty close, though. I think that's a great choice there. It's totally off the cuffs right there, which I love. Mine, and I've got to tell you folks a little story here. So it happened in, I think it was like the summer of 84, and my mom decided to take me out to a little movie known as Ghostbusters, and I had no clue what Ghostbusters was about. I had no idea who Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, these people that would become my childhood heroes later on, had no idea. I sat down in the theater, and the Ghostbusters go to the library. And they find that library ghost. They go up to them. They walk up. And they go get her. And the ghost turns around. The big demon face. When that happened, I shrieked. And I just started to run out to the lobby area. My mom had to come grab my arm. And had to like drag me back in. I was like, Mom, no, I'm not going back in there. You did not tell me that there's going to be some giant scary ghost lady here. And she kept trying to calm me down, saying that, no, don't worry, Jason. It's a comedy, all right? It's going to be a good loud laughter. I'm like, no, big giant scary ghost skeleton face in my face, no. And she actually literally had to, like, drag me to the seat. I'm pretty sure I suffered some scars on my arm from my mom digging her nails into my arm to get me back to my seat. But she promised me some candy. She says everything's going to be okay. And I laughed a lot of the times afterwards. And I laid the slimer ghost. The dogs coming out, that was a little bit freaky. But yeah, that was for me probably the first time I really got scared and had to like... run out of the theater. So yeah, Ghostbusters, the library and ghost right there, that definitely freaked me out. That's the first time I ever got scared. There's been other times, Jaws, definitely one of them. That's even nowadays too, if I see the movie playing on TV, I've got hesitant if I want to click on the actual title on my remote control. But yeah, that's mine, Ghostbusters.
I used to be obsessed with Ghostbusters. It's the first film I can remember being absolutely obsessed with. I bought the novelization of it. The first 7-inch single I bought was the Ray Parker Jr. theme tune. I must have watched that film a million times, and you're so right, that first scene. There's nothing in the film like it, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
It's truly scary when you see it cold. When you see it at like 10 years old, it's like, Jesus, what's that?
I know.
The rest of the film is just Laugh City, Arizona, really.
I would say the Rick Moranis possession sequence is pretty scary. It's being chased by the demon dogs.
Yeah,
there's nothing. Nothing.
And the hands coming out, of the couch. That was also pretty horrible.
I had for the longest time this running argument with somebody, a friend of mine, because he would always talk about how he considered Ghostbusters to be a horror film, and I'm like, no, you're on crack. It's not a horror movie, it's a comedy. There's nothing in this film that's even remotely scary. And I saw it, you know, when it was released in theaters. I think it was 1984. Mm-hmm. You know, I was 10 years old. I don't remember being... It's possible that I was traumatized by it, and I, you know, erased that memory. But no, I never really saw why... I mean, even rewatching it, you know, it was the one scene that you're... And I'm not saying that you're wrong for having been scared. I mean, what scares you?
It's right, Lackey. You're probably desensitized from seeing Ghostbusters and people's face ripped off, that a little scare like that didn't do anything to you. I get it.
No, if you lived like had my childhood, where, you know, I was being tortured by ghosts and demons and aliens and little claymation monsters on a regular basis. Oh yeah, by the time you get to 10, you're like, yeah, it's a scary ghost librarian. Yeah, I get scarier things in my breakfast cereal.
You had the Ouija breakfast cereal, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Actually, you got a Ouija board on the back of every box.
That's great.
You know, it came with a different planchette, you know, like wrapped up like a Cracker Jack prize.
I want to know what scared Zoe Rose Smith, our friend Zobo with Shotgun.
I don't think anything has ever scared that girl, ever.
I think if anyone's afraid of no ghost, I would say it's Zoe.
Yes.
Ghosts are afraid of her.
She'd be my favorite Ghostbuster. Alright. Alright, so let's go back to you, Elwood, and let's talk about, we're going to discuss what... I'm going to change moves here right now. Talk about stuff that made us scared. And now we're going to talk about the moments in movies that made us cry, alright? The really moments, first time we watched a flick that we cried at. There's been a lot of great movies that brought out those tear ducts in us. So, I'll start with you, Elwood. What was the first time a movie made you cry?
Okay. I mean, I was born in 83, so a lot of the 80s childhood movies were... They didn't. When we could talk about Family Fair from the 80s, a lot of it's very traumatic. So, compared to what they class as Family Fair now, it's just like, you know, the snooty cat and the slovenly dog with the celebrity voices and stuff. But yeah, but the scene that made me cry, and one that I think I still can't go back and watch now, is the death of the horse in Neverending Story.
The big fluffy dog.
No, the horse, he drowns in the swamp of sadness.
Oh, okay. All right, it's been a long time.
Basically, he has to cross through the swamp of sadness, and if you get bummed out and depressed, then you sink into the swamp, so you've got to think happy thoughts, and the horse apparently gets depressed, and...
Come on, Ortex. What's the matter? What's wrong? Come on, boy. What's the matter? I understand. It's too difficult for you.
Archer! You're sinking! Come on! Turn around! You have to now! Come on! Artax! Fighting against the sadness
my friend. I love you.
It's so depressing because the you see this horse being dragged down into the mud, and then it sort of like cuts, and it's not like in Bambi where Bambi's mum dies and it's just like all happy music and stuff, you know, and like the cinematic version of your parents shaking their keys at you to distract you. No, you're just left with Atreyu looking at this puddle where his horse was, and just looking so bummed out, and it just like it's still. It upset me then, and it's the reason I still can't watch Neverending Story now. It's just really sad to see
that horse fight it.
Jeez.
That's one of the worst films of all time. I can't believe that's your...
That's my saddest moment.
If you want a deep cut,
I can give you one. But...
I've never actually seen the Neverending Story, so I find that it's amusing that there's a movie out there with a depressed horse. Is it named Marvin? That's what I want to know.
I think you also know
I'm feeling very depressed.
I'm not going to like kill anyone else's selection, but when everyone else is giving their selections, I mean, I can name several others from the 80s that were really brutal that your parents like put on for you, going, "Oh, you know, this would be fun. You know, Jim Henson made this."
Jim Henson made it. It's called The Dark Crystal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fun fantasy flick for everybody. The only thing I really remember from the Never Ending Story is that song, Never Ending Story.
The Mall from Catch a Goo Goo.
Yeah, I remember that song, but I don't actually remember anything else about the movie. I should watch that again now to see if it is as depressing as Elwood says.
Okay. Well, the book and the actual pendant for the Never Ending Story, there was only one ever made. And it's currently in the possession of Steven Spielberg, and it's in his office behind bulletproof glass. So, but the book's really good if you ever read it. You have like different colored text for like the real world and the fantasy world, and it's a really colorful world. It's just a shame that we have this crappy moment where the horse bites it. So. Okay. And unfortunately, in the production, the horse actually did die because it got caught up in the machinery. Jeez. And drowned. So, yeah, double bummer there, really.
Damn, man. You play darkness.
Never watching that.
It's like darkness on top of darkness there, right? Like a darkness sad overload.
I don't think we can top that. I don't think we can top the dead horse. Let's move on.
That's the sort of story that generally gets reserved for when you're talking about really like Cannibal Holocaust.
I know, right? All right, let's move to you, Lackey. What was the first time a movie made you cry?
I'm not 100% sure I ever like cried at a movie when I was a kid. The first movie I can remember crying at was Fantasia 2000. I would have been like 26, 27 at the time. And I went to see it opening weekend because the original Fantasia is one of my favorite films. Mm. And I went to see it opening weekend. I went to see it opening weekend in IMAX.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And the closing, the last segment, the one that's based on, I think, the Stravinsky's Firebird Suite with the forest elemental and or the dryad or whatever she's supposed to be, and the stag, and it was so beautiful it literally moved me to tears.
Oh, okay.
That is like the first time I can recall crying at a film. Like a lot of, now Elwood was talking about, you know, seeing there are a lot of traumatic moments in like the canonical adventure, family oriented adventure films of like the 80s, like, you know, Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, all that. I don't understand why, but I didn't see most of those until I entered my late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
Like when I was a kid, I was more interested in watching movies like Blade Runner and Buckaroo Banzai. So I didn't see like Goonies until I was 30.
Gotcha.
So that's why I never cried at things like Legend or there would have been probably some stuff. I finally saw Dark Crystal when I was like 28, and that. There's stuff that probably would have reduced me to a weeping pile of weeping if I'd seen it when I was like 8, but...
And I like the fact, too, I totally love the fact that you watch this movie on the big IMAX screen, and just the beauty of the animation brought you to tears. That's actually...
Oh, yeah, really, it was just and that was the great thing about it, is that, you know, you've got this gigantic screen, and you've just got this gigantic immersive sound mix, and it's so overwhelming. And it was just like, I was just completely... just like, oh my god, I can't handle this. This is so beautiful. I have no language. Yeah, basically, you know.
Isn't that what search for, though, constantly as movie bloggers? We constantly search for these moments in film. I mean, for myself, I can understand what you're saying, because I've only experienced it twice. One, seeing the first trailer for Mad Max Fury Road from the Comic-Con, and the second being the opening of Antichrist. I've the perfect combination of music and cinematography just creates this incredible experience that you like constantly search for as a film watcher, and when you hear this, it's almost like a Stendhal syndrome feeling that washes over you, and it's like the greatest thing.
I got the same feeling when I watched Tree of Life in theaters. I was just really just that Emmanuel Lubezki. I can't pronounce that dude's name. Emmanuel Lubezki, the cinematographer for Tree of Life, and Gravity, and Birdman. Yeah. But when I watched Tree of Life in theaters, I did have tears well up in my face. Different story when I watched it again at home. I didn't have quite that feeling there, but when I watched that in theaters, yeah, it was really good. I love that pick.
To go back very briefly to Antichrist for a moment, I had the same feeling with Antichrist that I had the same feeling with Melancholia at several points in Melancholia. Now, I don't think that I was necessarily driven to tears, but I was just sort of awestruck into complete silence and just gobsmacked. Von Trier's very good at that. It's really kind of a shame he's such a jerk.
Yeah, Dance Through the Dark, I probably had tears streaming down my face through, like, half that movie right there. In fact, I couldn't even see most of the movie because tears were just in my face, because I saw that in theaters, and I had to, like, rewatch it again so I can actually understand what was going on, because tears were just in my face the whole time. Yeah. So, going here. All right, let's move to you, Kim. Get sad on us. Get morose. Get like Morrissey. All right, what's this?
Honestly, this was the hardest category for... Well, the next one is hard because I couldn't figure it out, but... Sad was hard mostly because I'm a mega crybaby. Like, I cry over a lot of stuff. I'm just, I don't know, emotional that way. I don't know. But I have a feeling that My Girl was my thing, but I couldn't remember the scene, and I don't really want to go watch it again. So I'm going to go with the Surefire one, which was in Fox and the Hound. When Widow Tweed, like, leaves... you know, like, Todd in the forest, I was like, okay, I have this, like, huge, I'm, like, a huge animal lover, so I saw this moment, and, you know, I've had pets all my life, and I'm thinking about, like, I can relate, and I was really young, too, so I could relate to the fact that, oh my god, I watched this, and it was leaving her, and I was just leaving the pet behind, and I was like, oh, the heartbreak, and all that feeling, and it was intense. Like, I felt like, I think that was the first time I cried.
Because you kind of felt like you were leaving a pet that you own, like, because it got to
those characters. Yeah, because you can relate to it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't remember when this film came out, like, 93. I think I was, like, 8 or 9 or something like that. So it was, like, you know, a very raw feeling of just, you know, like, a really, like, you know, I don't know why, like, people would watch this when they were so young, and they put this super sad scene of, like, ripping a pet and their owner apart.
Dizzy are cruel bastards, all right.
There's a lot of their animal-oriented films have a scene like that. One, of course, that everybody thinks of is the death of Bambi's mother. But there's also, like, the death of Mustafa in Lion King. Even in my other favorite Disney film, the Lady and the Tramp, there's the several point, including the point where you think that Trusty, the big kind of like a bloodhound That's one of the friends of Lady gets hit by a car and you think he's dead.
Yeah, that was also on my list, but I ended up with this one. I think this one, like, I watched Lady and the Tramp later after Fox and the Hound, so that was why. But I mean, all these things are like, if not, I would have got with some like smoochy romance, you know. So it was
like... That's cool. Oh, I know.
And that we want to point out here, not death to smoochy.
Yes. Good one there. All right, Steven, what was the first time a movie made you sad?
Well, it's very lucky that I had a second choice, because, yeah, again, Lucky stolen my thunder by mentioning Bambi's mum dying. But actually, I'd actually discounted it. But that was all this week when I've been thinking about it. I was thinking, yeah, my mum took me to see that. But I was born in 1971, and you guys make me feel really bloody old, telling me that you were born in 93 and ridiculous things like that.
Well, and, I'm not the oldest person on the podcast. I usually am.
Well, I'm granddad, right? Anyway, so when I remember my mum taking me to see it at a local cinema, and I must have been 3 or 4 years old. I don't think I really remember it. I just remember that I went to see it, and then later experiences have told me that's sad. So I actually went somewhere else. Now, again, because I'm from the United Kingdom, because I'm from England, because I was born in 1971, movies were at a premium until the mid-80s when VHS came in. So we were really constrained to what was shown on the television. And we only had, at that time, 3 channels, and one of them only played for half a day. And so lots of films got played over and over again. And I don't think you guys, well, Elwood might know this film, and you guys might surprise me, but there's a British animation of Richard Adams' Watership Down.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, okay.
There certainly is.
Okay, so you guys know. I just wondered if it was just a British thing, but it used to be on TV all the time. And,
what?
You know, it's an animal animation. It was rated U, which is universal.
Wow.
And it used to be on quite regularly, at least twice a year, probably around Easter time. It's a lovely, beautifully animated film about the life of rabbits, and John Hurt does the voice in it, and Richard Briers, who's like was one of my little comedy heroes growing up. And it's awful. It's full of death and destruction, and at the very end, the bit that really makes me cry is when Hazel the rabbit, who's sort of got the surviving rabbits to a new place, is visited by what's effectively the rabbit god and dies, just flops down and dies. And that still, even right now, is making me very, very sad. It's one of the saddest things I remember. It's an amazing film. It's meant to teach children all about death and about life, but it does it in a way that Disney could only dream of.
Jeez, I mean, that movie is brutal. The violence in that movie is very... I'm just really surprised that they put this on TV multiple times out in the UK. It's really showing any time once here.
One of the most successful British films of all time. So tend to blow our own trumpet. We don't have much to blow about in cinema.
Yeah. If you're growing up in the UK, you're going to watch... There's 3 things that you probably watch as a child. You're going to watch Worship Down... the other one would be the Ralph Bakshi version of Lord of the Rings, which has got all that rotoscope and weird imagery in it, which just freaks you out. And the other one would be Animals of Farthing Wood, which is essentially Worship Down, but, you know, 3 seasons worth of animals being killed in horrible ways as they try to make their way across country to this park. But yeah, the Worship Down, it's rivers of blood and rabid animals and a seagull that says, was it piss off or fuck off? I remember that always used to be worn out.
Zero Mostel. I mean, saying that. But yeah, it's amazing.
Borrowed the tape, that would always be the worn out part.
But yeah, I mean, but the end is really touching. But the way that rabbit dies, and in later life, I owned rabbits and blah, blah, blah. And that's how they go. They just flop over, and
I thought you were going to say they get visited by the rabbit god. Like, you keep seeing this beam of light coming down the gun. It's like, oh no, another one.
I don't think I can see the rabbit god, but they may have done.
It's a church rabbit, isn't it? It's a damn silly church rabbit. He's the rabbit god, isn't he?
Is that right? Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. No, good choice right there. I'm going to feel like a real softy now, telling you my first time a movie made me sad after talking about Worship Down and talked about death and everything like that. Damn, how do I follow that up there? But I'm going to do this anyways. My moment comes from a movie directed by Frank Oz. It is The Muppets Take Manhattan. And it is the moment when they all go their separate ways and they say goodbye to each other. And they're singing the song.
Don't want to leave, but we both know. Sometimes it's better to go.
Somehow I know we'll meet again. Not sure quite where, and I don't know just when.
You're in my heart, so until then, it's time for saying goodbye. Somehow I know we'll meet again. Not sure quite where, and I don't know just when. You're in my heart, so until then, wanna smile, wanna cry, saying goodbye.
La 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 la, la. It's time for saying goodbye. La la la.
That made me really, really sad because I loved the Muppets. Great Muppet Caper, probably the first Muppet movie I've ever saw. Yep. And then I saw the Muppet movie, and then when the Muppets Take Manhattan came out, I was all happy. And then that moment comes on, and yeah, that was probably the first time I had tears streaming down my face because I didn't want them to go. Right? It's like Kim said earlier when she talked about the Fox and the Hound, and you know animals getting separated from each other. It's like, no, damn it. Stay together, right? The band should not leave, all right? Yeah, so that was the moment that made me sad.
Is it just me, or does it seem in particular that our generation really kind of relates to those Muppets as if they're really real people?
Yeah.
Don't spoil it. They are real people.
Don't ruin all those messages.
I see you. Do you remember the special they did to mark Jim Henson's death, where the Muppets learn about his death? I had no idea Jim Henson had actually died. That's why I learned at the same time the Muppets did that he died. So.
Oh jeez.
That had to be hard.
Yeah.
But I tell you what was hard: watching Emmett Otter's Christmas special.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Lackey made me cry watching that.
Wait, say that again.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band of Christmas. It was it was for the people at home listening at home who don't know what this is. It's a based on a Russell Hoban novel. It was a special that the Henson Company did for TV back in the mid to late '70s with I think songs by Paul Williams or something like that, and you know, it was we did it for our Christmas. I think we did it for our second Christmas episode.
It's our second one.
And it's it doesn't have any of the Muppets in it, but it is just a very it's a Christmas special that I think it's not as well known as like the canonical Muppet stuff, but it's got its following, and it's a very emotional kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. You just see what Emmett and his mother go through to have a nice Christmas, and they can never catch a break. They trade in their worldly possessions for this like one shot of happiness, and it's heartwarming, but not in the way you would think. It doesn't go the way you think it goes at all. But it's if you like the Muppets, then you should definitely watch it because it's really really cool. It's one that puts you for the ringer. And Henson always had that dark side. I mean, as we mentioned already, Dark Crystal. The Landstriders get killed. They look like bunnies, for Christ's sake.
Oh, jeez.
And they get eaten alive by scarab beetle things.
The thing that always got me with the Dark Crystal, and again, even with a movie that I didn't see until I was like 30, but the thing that always got me, because it's probably like a more mature thing that you kind of understand better when you're older, is that basically when like the Skeksis, like the little creatures, they're basically abducting them and just basically sucking out their souls. And using it like for energy, and you basically are just left with like these lifeless, soulless husks. And that's something that I don't think I would have been really all that interested in as a kid. But you know, seeing it at 30, I'm like, oh my god, that is like the worst thing ever. That is like a living death.
All right, well let's. I love to talk more about video nasties, but let's move on to our next topic. But before we do, we're gonna take a small little break. We're gonna play ads from other great podcast shows that you should definitely listen to.
We'll return after these messages.
Hi, I'm Nick from the Nick and Vince Podcast. I want to let you know about a new podcast I'm launching next month. It's called the St. Paul Filmcast, where each week, me and my co-host Dan will pick one classical film to review. We'll be discussing new films, modern films, new releases, and other aspects film related. You'll find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can already find our podcast on Twitter at St. Paul Filmcast and Instagram. I hope you give us a listen. Thank you very much.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hi, I'm Elton John, and when I'm not attending royal weddings, I like to listen to TV Good Sleep Bad on the That Moment In Podcast Network.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cinema Recall Podcast over at ThatMomentIn.com. Very excited to have you back. After those ads from other great podcast shows, they're not paying me to say nice things about them. I actually do genuinely like their shows, and I urge you all to please check them out. Thank you. So our last category that we are going to be discussing on the show is the first time a movie turned us on. All right? Yes, I know. We're going kind of like, we're getting personal here, all right? But I am kind of curious about this because I have a choice here. Let's start back with you again, Elwood. I want to know, the first time you watched a movie where you thought, yeah, all right, what's going on down there? All right, yeah, you know, just something that was very, very sexual and whatnot to you.
It's not getting better the way you describe this section, Ben. Okay. Right, so the first time I felt like, you know, when you climb the gym ropes... we would have to obviously talk about the greatest movie of 1999, and that would be Cruel Intentions, and it's Selma Blair and Sarah Michelle Gellar making out in the park.
I guess I'm just scared.
Of what?
Duh, boys. Never even gone to first base with a guy.
Haven't you ever practiced on one of your girlfriends?
Ew, no. It's gross.
Well, it's not gross. How else do you think girls learn? Okay, face me. Now, close your eyes and wet your lips.
Are you for real?
You want to learn or not?
I guess.
See, that wasn't so scary.
It was nothing.
Okay, let's try it again. Only this time, I'm going to stick my tongue in your mouth. And when I do that, I want you to massage my tongue with yours. And that's what first base is. Okay. Eyes closed.
That is, not only is it like the greatest film of 99, I mean, this is a year where we had Boondock Saints, we had Fight Club, we had Being John Malkovich, we had all these like fantastic movies come out. It was sort of like the boom of the indie American indie circuit, and this little movie comes out, and you have to remember, when this film comes out, Sarah Michelle Gellar is at the height of her popularity. She's doing Buffy, and me and my friends, we all went to see it because we all wouldn't like Sarah Michelle Gellar. And it's all like Sarah Michelle Gellar, and she's going to say rude words, and this is like the whole concept has gone on. And we went in, and the cinema, and everyone else apart from me and my three friends are all couples. These guys have been dragged there by their girlfriends or wives or whatever, expecting to see a chick flick. And certainly an interesting chick flick, if you want to call it that. Sarah Michelle Gellar not only obviously telling us that she knows all the rude words, but showing us how girls teach themselves about things in a scene that was also nominated Best Kiss at that year's MTV Movie Awards. So it's got the mark of award circuit as well to it as well. But park sequence would be for myself.
Yeah, it was the first time I can remember a movie addressing incest and how it'd be kind of hot, actually. I know it's odd.
Well, they're stepbrother and sister, so it's not...
It's not actual incest, right? Or it's stepbrothers, all right? But still, siblings, all right? The whole bet that she mates with him and everything. I just remember that part being kind of steaming hot, too. Like, I would like to have a stepsister. I would like my stepsister to be, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Yeah, that'd be really kind of hot right there, but... Well,
the thing about the whole sequence, though, it's not shot in, like, a gratuitous way. It's shot in a very artistic way. The framing's really nice, and just the intimacy of the shot, and it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going to cram this in there because, girls making out, it's, going to give us big bucks. Because, I mean, this is 99, so...
Did Wild Things come out then? Was Wild Things out?
Wild Things wasn't radar for most people.
96 or 97, I think.
Okay, all right.
I think people weren't getting excited about lipstick lesbians until sort of like the early 2000s, sort of when we all discovered porn. I think that's when lipstick lesbians became popular, because obviously we look like American Pie 2 and American Pie 3.
I think I honestly always felt that kind of like Bound was actually kind of like the beginning of that trend.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. Well, all right. Well, good choice there with Cruel Intentions, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Selma Blair. Very talented actresses, very beautiful. I think some of theirs is really good. I totally forgot about that moment. All right, good one. All right, Lackey, let's go with you, man. What was the movie that?
This is I can't really put my finger on a specific thing, other than I think that like the first time I ever found anything sort of interesting in a sexual way. Any sort of like moving picture entertainment was actually not a film, but like a feature film, but like a music video. I had my father was very much someone who like always had to have like the new thing. So we had cable very early on. So I think I remember the first time I really ever found anything sexy was the video for the song "I Know What Boys Like" by The Waitresses.
Okay, I don't know this. I know the song, but
it's on MTV. If we're going, not MTV.
I know the song. It's on YouTube. Not the video.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. The video is on YouTube. If we're talking about actual feature films, I guess one of the things that kind of goes along with the rise of cable, the importance of cable and having 50 channels in America, is that one of them, premium channel, basically went all softcore. Basically after about midnight, and that was Cinemax, which is widely kind of known as Skinemax. To Americans of a certain generation. So whatever film it was that I like, feature film I was that I was first turned on by, I'm pretty sure it was either French or Italian, and starred Sylvia Christel as a Manuel.
Okay.
I
know about that name. Yeah.
There's just all these sort of movies where even it might not even have started as Sylvia Christel, but there was this kind of like trend in the 70s of basically making these softcore movies and just attaching them because there was one exploitation film based on the memoirs of a French woman named Emmanuel Arson. All of these unrelated films, when they were released over in America, had the word had the name Emmanuel plopped on them, even if it had no real connection to anything, and you'd have things like Black Emmanuel and Emmanuel in the House of the Dead and stuff like that.
I remember
that.
Emmanuel in Space.
Emmanuel in Space, yeah, that was that Allen. Was the 90s, I think. Yeah, Krista Allen, that was one of those things. And again, I think that was a Showtime thing. Mm-hmm. Showtime went into the business of doing all these things with the success after the success of the Red Shoe Diaries. Yep. There were all these softcore shows like Erotic Confessions, Intimate Confessions, or something like that, and all these shows. So yeah, it was almost certainly Italian and dubbed very badly and made in the mid 70s, whatever it was. The only film I can actually think of, the only actually clear memory, is I have this one scene in my head, and I don't remember what film it was, but it was very badly dubbed, and there was a guy playing a guitar and butchering the lyrics to Pink Floyd's Time. That's not a very good answer, but I'm sticking with it. Hopefully I haven't stepped on Steven's toes. So.
Do you know what? For the first time, you're in the clear, mate.
Okay. Nice. Well, awesome. All right, good choice there. All right, talked about Emmanuel and the waitress video right there. All right, Tim, let's put you on the spot. Let's make you embarrassed. What was the first time movie turned you on?
I don't think I'd be embarrassed particularly. Okay. Mostly because I have a lot of sexy scenes that I like right now, because I have this whole obsession over the movies that tread between love and lust. I went on this huge rant with Elwood one time on our production meeting, so you can see our tangents. The sexiest scene I have really is the first one I remember is in Titanic. Sounds like a really corny choice right now as I'm saying it.
It's a steamy one.
Yeah, so it's it was like the sex scene in the car. Mm-hmm. Where you don't really see much going on, but then you see like the cars steam up, and then you know the handprints and stuff like that. It was in 96, so I was kind of young. But I gotta say that after I saw this film 3 times in the theaters, it was not sexy anymore by the second and third time.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that scene. I mean, it's a very erotically charged scene, and I think when Kate Winslet's being drawn by James Cameron, that's normally the best place to start the film and just go from there.
Yeah, well, I have to say why it's also sexy is it's kind of like the starting point of when I saw Kate Winslet, and I think she is super elegant and super amazing as an actress. So I don't know. And plus, I like Leonardo DiCaprio back then. He was super cute, and right now he's handsome, I guess.
So Elwood, my question for you is: should she watch Dark Season?
Do I remember what Dark Season is now? Dark Season is a kids show, and I use that term rather loosely because it's like saying it's a kids show is the same way that saying Worship Down's family viewing. It was created by Russell T. Davis, and it's noteworthy for being one of Kate Winslet's first first roles, really, where she plays like a kind of chavvy, punky problem child. And it is one noteworthy as well for being like one of the few films that she doesn't get naked in. I mean, I saw Titanic, and then it seemed like every movie I saw after that, she always seemed to be nude. It's like Heavenly Creatures, which would be another good one for this list. I would say that's kind of erotically charged in places.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point there.
I totally agree with him. There's nothing. It's a really good scene, but I think it's. It's good because it's got a decent director behind it.
Yeah.
I always love the fact that James Cameron's the guy drawing her. It's not Leonardo DiCaprio's hand, it's James Cameron's hand drawing her.
It says, too, that, hey, I'm the director. If anyone's going to see Kate Winslet naked, it's me. It's me. James Cameron.
Draw me like one of your Skynet girls.
That's my James Cameron impersonation right there. Yeah. Me. James Cameron. I just imagine you talk with that. I don't know. Let's move to you.
You're playing the theme tune.
Yes, James, we're playing the theme tune. James Jammin's going down to raise the bar.
That's right. South Park reference, I love it. All right, Stephen, let's continue this trend with you, good buddy.
Okay. All right. So I think we've already set the context of I probably wasn't exposed to very much in my formative years until the age of the video came. And we would rent videos that were clearly not designed for people my age. So I'm looking at a film that was released, I think, in the UK in 82. So probably didn't get onto film until into VHS in the UK to 83 at the earliest. We used to get an older friend's brother or sister to rent us these videos. And we used to watch them in all night sessions in this video player around a 12-inch CRT TV. And the one that I remember is Porky's.
Okay.
Oh, which, yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. And we watched that film till we must have made all the metallic stuff fall off the tape. We'd rent it every week. We love that bloody film. I watched it again about a month ago because I was on a bit of a kick of my youth, and it's shit. it's about as sexy as having piles, and it's got a really, really weird subplot about anti-Semitism whilst ignoring the other racism going. And there's just so much wrong with it. I'm sure the VHS I had was put together in a different order. Anyway, what I'm not going to mention is the shower scene, which would have been the very, very first time I ever saw a lady's Kim, close your ears, her vagina. But what I'm actually going to go for is Kim Cattrall, who I had a huge crush on at the time.
Yeah.
With this sort of braless gym teacher thing going on. What's the name of the film? Lassie or something?
Lassie, yeah.
Yeah. And that wasn't that I found arousing, but just her. She was the sexiest American I could imagine for at least 6 months of my life. My moment.
I thought she was.
I believe she is not American.
She's
Canadian.
Canadian film, wasn't it? But you got to remember, in the UK in 1983, it was all America, mate.
the funniest thing I still to this day find about Porky's that it was directed by Bob Clark, who went on to direct A Christmas Story.
Really? That was Bob Clark that did Porky's?
Bob Clark.
Oh, shit. You're right. Okay, yeah, you're right. Okay. Damn.
And whose first film is Children Shouldn't Play With Dead Things.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true. I was doing Black Christmas, and oh, yeah, he had a good range of music.
I do have to ask as well. Obviously in the UK, before we had, when videos came, they had an intro warning which said about what classifications were, and Simon Bates said that, you know, this film was rated 15, which means it may contain some sexy scenes. And I wondered, did the Americans have a version of that where they like said, oh, this film is rated R, this means that no one should watch this film, or whatever you
want. We didn't get that till later.
I don't remember ever having that at all. The only thing I remember having at the beginning of our videos was a message from the FBI saying don't copy this, and then a message from Interpol saying no, really don't copy this.
Okay.
Yeah, I just remember when you were in school and they used to like, you used to have that intro bumper play and everyone used to cheer at the mention of sexy scenes or foul language.
Yeah, well, I remember that, like, when you watch movies on TV, they would have that, like, this film contains coarse language and partial nudity. So they did that on cable sometimes before a movie played. And, or there was like, partial nudity, and we're like, alright, sweet side boob. Or they said, like, full frontal nudity, and we're like, alright, boobies. And so, yeah, we...
Or graphic nudity.
Yes.
And before I actually saw that in a film, I had kind of imagined that looking at all this, what was the description, graphic nudity in TV Guide, that it's, you know, it went all pixelated at the point. The screen went all pixelated, like computer graphics.
I have to, but now, like, you look at the warnings now for films, and these, like, mild perils, a badger gets poked with a spoon, someone blowtorches a swan or something, and it's like, you go in and you pretty much know what's going to happen because they pre-warned it, because there's some sensitive soul that is, like, going to get upset because a child's in mild peril, you know?
fantasy peril, smoking. They now, yes. With MPAA now mentions whenever a film has anybody smoking a cigarette.
Peril danger. Yes.
Do they have that up in Canada, Kim? Because I know they're a bit crazy up there, so you're like, you know, living this normal stretch of humanity where they're not like all...
I don't know, if you're talking about TV, I don't watch that much TV, but you have the basics. I mean, you have like... you have, like, oh, coarse language and, like, general stuff, you know, like, very normal. Don't go too crazy. But, I mean, I watch, like, public television, so I don't really have cable. Haven't had cable at all ever in my life. So it's, like, really mild things. Like, I don't know, now it's, like, when you watch Gotham, it'll be like, oh, this is suitable for a mature audience, you know, when it goes on.
I have to really, like, question, because everyone's so nice in Canada. I mean, they're always there to offer you like a donut or a smoke or something. And
you think,
I mean,
that $50.
and yet who comes from Canada? David Cronenberg.
I'm sure he seems like a nice guy. He just makes really fucked up movies here and there, but he seems like a nice guy.
David Cronenberg once said, I don't have a moral plan. I'm a Canadian.
Because Canadians are better than us, all right? So they don't need to have morals.
You've got a zombie defense plan, for Christ's sake, in Canada.
See, exactly.
This is the country that gave us Psycho Pike, the greatest Canucksploitation movie ever.
Psycho Pike.
I do want to know what the contingency plan is for dealing with zombies, though. Do you just try to like lead them all into Alberta and then surround them?
No, they're just going to blast them with the mighty rock power Rush. That's going to repel them.
There you go.
It's just like Tom Sawyer. They're going to let some big speakers and then just blast Tom Sawyer, and it's like the zombies will just be like pushed back onto Trump's lawn.
I had no idea there was Anglo-Canadian tensions. Would you're surprising me of all the countries to pick on.
I'm not thinking of Canada. I love Canada.
Yeah, we'll see.
Next step, let's bomb Switzerland.
No, Canada's gonna have the plan to stop the zombies.
Yeah.
I escaped
Vern,
America.
I also want to point out, Vern and I are Midwestern Westerners, which means we're practically Canadian.
That's true. Yes. We're right.
Is that your contingency plan?
Yeah. Do not. Yeah. So if Canada does attack us, we're on your side, Canada. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to secede to Canada. Yeah.
The Midwest survived grunge, so they can survive anything.
Exactly, all right.
So, like, we're prepared. You know, you can't beat us down.
We're not afraid of zombies. We live through Candlebot.
That's
God damn it.
Right. I remember seeing, like, the dwarves, and the lead singer kicks someone in the head. And I think it's Nicholas Olivier, the guy who was in Queens of the Stone Age. He's like, oh, if you don't want to be fucked, don't act like a pussy. And I'm like, fucking hell, what the hell's going on in the Midwest?
Jeez Christ. Yeah, we also have the Gin Blossoms, too. We survived that. And we survived Creed. All right. I lost track here. All right. Talk about my moment that would turn me on. And so it's another theater story. And I don't remember exactly what month it came out in, but I know the year. It came out in 1986. My dad took me to a theater to watch a movie that starred Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley Jr., two actors I would have no idea who they are until later on. But it was a movie called Transylvania Since 5000. And the movie is about these two reporters who go to this house to investigate strange paranormal things that are going on. It is a comedy, but the moment that really just got me a little excited there was the introduction to Gina Davis's character. And she plays this really seductive vampire, but she's wearing this outfit that just accentuates all the curves and parts of her body that was I must have been about not even 10 at the time. I had to be about 7 years old. Eight years old when I saw that movie. And I was just really, I was like, whoa, you know, it was between that one and also seeing the Maniac video from the movie Flashdance. That Michael Cimbaro video with Jennifer Beals doing her workout routine. Yeah. Those two moments, I think I went through puberty during that time. Is seeing that Flashdance video and watching the Transylvania Since 5000 video. And
so you basically started developing during Flashdance, and then by the time Gina Davis shows up in Transylvania 5000 in her Vampirella costume,
Vampirella.
A man. You were a man. You had developed facial hair by the end of that movie.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than watching a film with your parents and a sex scene comes on. And I don't think kids are going to ever... They don't have that experience now because they don't have sex scenes in movies. And you used to always have, like... They always used to be the same, you know, dark lighting and saxophone music. I mean, when they stopped putting saxophone sex scenes in movies, I mean... The legion of saxophone players that were suddenly out to work. I mean, that must have been such a great day for those people.
Really, yeah.
My grandma took my sister to see Basic Instinct when she was only about, I think, 13 at the time, because she thought it was going to be this really cool mystery, and she had no idea about all the graphic nudity and sets going on in that. But they stayed to watch the whole thing.
The scariest thing about Basic Instinct is Michael Douglas's pullover he wears to a nightclub. It's like a what were they thinking moment.
I know Lena Dunham killed a key moment in that scene in one of those things. It was like the fourth season of Girls, where she decided to show everyone her growler.
And that's why we don't watch Girls.
I rewatched. I mean, that's the thing. I rewatched the whole five seasons, and by the end, you just. I don't know if I hated the characters or myself more for watching that.
But there's just so much good pop culture you could never enjoy again, thanks to Lena Dunham.
Yeah,
and I was wrong there too. It is about two reporters right there. They actually do go to this castle, but they're going there to find Frankenstein's monster. And so you do have like a mummy character, and Gina Davis plays like the sexy vampire. But it's got Carol Kane in there as well. I haven't seen the movie in ages, but I just remember that sequence of her in the outfit, and it was quite good. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised of how much Rocky Horror Picture Show went over my head the first time I watched it. That whole pool sequence, that completely went over my head the first time I watched it. It was like watching it as an adult. It's like, whoa, this is a bit risque.
Yes. Well, I mean, guys, what's that one movie, too? Why is it blatant on me now? Logan's Run. I mean, there's a lot of like, hardcore nudity going on there.
Oh, Jenny Adler.
Oh, yeah, Jenny a Gutter.
And that's a PG
movie.
One
of the things...
That was going to be one of my choices. That's a film that was shown a lot in the UK because of Jenny Agutter. And yeah, her swimming naked in the pool, come on.
Yeah.
No, that's Walkabout where she's naked.
No.
Yeah,
no,
Walkabout. Nick Rogue. Walkabout. They showed Walkabout in my high school.
Yeah, they do.
School.
They always forget about the nude scene in Walkabout. I'm sure Kim's going off to like make a sandwich or something while this is going on.
I'm just like, I'm just listening to all this and I'm like, what is going on? I haven't heard of any of this. No. And I was like,
Jenny Agutter was the UK's go-to girl for not minding getting her boobs out in the 70s and 80s, but she actually made her start in a film which all children had to watch. She was in the film version of The Railway Children, and she'd always be famous for waving her frilly 1920s knickers at a train to slow it down.
Yeah, but the thing with Jenny Agutter, she looks like a good girl who wouldn't get naked. That was always the surprising thing. So her nudity always came out of nowhere. It was sort of like, odd. I know there's a reference in Harold and Kumar, and it's like, oh, it's Katie Holmes. And they say, oh, she's a good girl, and we're going to see her boobs.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like with Jenny Agutter. She was like the precursor to
Katie Holmes. Is her boobs out in American Werewolf in London, or is that just wishful thinking in my part?
No, I'm pretty sure she gets them out in American Werewolf.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's from her contract right there. I think she had always show nudity and something. I think.
And just to think, today she's on Call the Midwife, where she plays a nun.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. We paid for Lackey's TV watching. It should be noted.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that he's watching Call the Midwife is just mind blowing.
Okay. This is the fact. As Brits, we're tied into paying for TV and radio. We don't watch or listen to, but Lackey does.
Yes, he does.
And I honestly, Elwood, Stephen, I appreciate your sacrifice more than you know.
It's why I don't give it to charity. It's like, I'm already funding one American. I don't need to fund a child in Africa as well.
Is that what he is? Is he adopted?
America's only Doctor Who fan.
You kept our show going for a long time, all right? No one else here in Britain. Yeah, only just Lackey.
I'm pretty sure only kept making it from 80 to 87 just to keep me happy.
Good. Well, I gotta say thank you, everybody. That was a really fun conversation that we had about the first time of movies with us. Now it comes the time of the show where each of you get to plug each of your own projects here. Let's start with you, Elwood, since you host all the other shows on That Moment in Network. You're the host of Game Warp, TV Good, Sleep Bad, Asian Cinema Film Club. You are found on Twitter at Elwood_Jones. The E is capitalized in Elwood. The J is capitalized in Jones. I totally forgot my other podcast that's not on the network, but hopefully it should be, The Movies and Tea, that she also hosts with Kim.
Yes. I co-host all those shows. I mean, Movies and Tea isn't on thatmoment.com, I think mainly because we don't have five shows and I host four of them. Questions may be asked about that, and it also makes promoting anything a bit of a pain. I'm associated with all those great shows, which you can find on thatmoment.com, which is available on both Podomatic and Spotify. If you just search for thatmoment.com, and I'll let the guys do the promotion for the shows themselves. Needless to say, I get to work with some fantastic people, and I'm just fortunate that I've somehow managed to be in the position where all my weird obsessions I now seem to be involved in a podcast about, and it's just an added bonus. I just get to work with such fantastic people who humor and go along with these obsessions, and in some ways, in many ways, often encourage them. So thank you guys for being part of it, and I hope that we can continue to build our network and add to what we've done already. So thank you all.
I love it.
First time I cried on a podcast.
That's right. Nice.
I was going, aww, that's so
sweet. Yeah.
Right. Now get back to work. Go podcast.
Oh, all right.
All right, Lackey.
It's like a.
TV Can Sleep Bad, which is a podcast whose name I regularly get right, unlike my co-host. I'm on that, and I'm sure that can be found on Twitter and on Spotify and iTunes and probably somewhere on the dark web. And then I have my own website, which is called Blackie Writes About Film, where I sporadically write about film, and that's blackieonfilm.com. And when I'm not doing those things, I can usually be found under a desk whimpering.
Well, yeah, your Twitter handle for the show is TV Good Sleep Bad for the TV Good Sleep Bad podcast. And then right. Is it now Lackey Writes Film? Is just Lackey Writes Film?
Lackey on Film.
Oh, Lackey on Film, sorry.
LackeyOnFilm.com and Lackey on Film is the Twitter handle.
That Lackey on Film, yeah. Okay, gotcha. All right. Anything new going on with Lackey on Film at all? Or
No, I haven't written about film in a while.
Gotcha, okay.
Things have just been kind of hectic, and I don't know I don't know if or when I'm going to get back to it. But you know, it's there, and there's a nice archive of horror, dark comedy, noir, science fiction, fantasy, and just other weird stuff that runs across my field of vision.
All right.
So. Yeah. Even if I'm not actively updating it, you can always get my Deathloop slots on the remake of Old Boy.
All right. Well, tell me, what's going on with the TV Good Sleep Bad? What new episodes you guys have coming out? Anything you want to promote?
We just covered, was it IT Crowd and Snuffbox?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a double shot of Matt Berry. And that kind of, the whole... kind of like Mighty Boosh offshoot.
Snuffbox, I've actually had several people like say that after they heard the show, they went out and checked out Snuffbox, which is really surprising, seeing as the scene that Lackey chooses to reenact from that particular episode. makes me surprised we still have a show on the network after that, but
yes.
I think, because whenever I view my shows mentally and stuff, they all have like different locations they're set, and after we watch Snuffbox, TV Good Sleep Bad will always be in the setting of a Hangman's Gentleman's Club. That's where that now takes place. If I think about Agent Cinema Film Club, it's the noodle bar from Blade Runner. If I think about like Movies and Tea, it's a diner, and Game Warp is just like it's like Mount Doom. It's the Tower of Evil where we keep our stunt gamer locked in the basement, forcing him to play Gran Turismo while forced reading in creme brulee. And it's kind of like The Wire, and the way all the shows are just like all part of the same universe.
Gotcha.
Our next episode is going to have it's going to have the legendary 90s fake news show Snuffbox. And what's the other show we're doing?
No, we're doing Brass Eye and Brass Eye.
Brass Eye and what's the other one?
Fish Me, which is another British comedy series.
Okay, say those two again.
So we're doing the next episode. We're looking at Brass Eye, in particular episode on drugs, and we're going to be looking at the British Asian comedy series Goodness Gracious Me, which features a skit called The Million Rupee Man, which I think is going to be an interesting one to watch. There's definitely some interesting points in that, and it's the one that Lackey had never heard of before, which makes it all the more interesting when we introduce each other to someone that we've never heard of. It's always quite exciting when that happens.
Never heard of any of these shows.
Cake, Lackey. Watch out for cake. That's all I can say.
Watch out for cake. Okay. All right.
I know. What you
mean. All right. Moving on here.
Cake.
I have prepped for the occasion by watching the Going Out for an English sketch.
Okay. I'm
what's the blandest thing on the menu?
Yeah.
I would say to hear this episode now, so
27 plates.
Alright. I've been saying to hear this episode so I know exactly the jokes you're talking about, because I have no idea. But let's move on to you, Kim. One of the co-hosts of Game War Podcast. Their Twitter account is at Game Warp Podcast. Kim's Twitter account is at Tranquil Dreams. Tell us, Kim, anything new going
Tranquil
on?
Tranquil Dreams underscore.
Underscore, I'm sorry.
At Tranquil Dreams underscore.
Thank you for stopping me there. I apologize. I did not see the underscore there. Okay. Yes, at Chankles
Games. I know. It was a regret on my level after that when I did it.
Underscore.
So, I run Game Warp Podcast with Elwood. You can find it. Like, we just do a lot of interviews and game reviews. And if you go to our YouTube channel via our Twitter, since we don't have enough subscribers to have our own name right now, it would be the easiest way. We do like some let's plays, and as Elwood says, our stunt gamer who is locked in our dungeon runs a racing game series of Gran Turismo and Assetto Corsa, and Project Cars 2 is coming up. As for myself, I write a very versatile blog. It's kind of a reviews and lifestyle blog called Tranquil Dreams. So it's klling.wordpress.com. Should really get a domain. And then I have a photography blog, which is avenueofdaydreams.wordpress.com as well. I work with Elwood, so he motivates me to be super busy all the time. As we say, we are allergic to free time.
Yeah. I mean, Kim is like really the backbone of the whole operation, because I'm like a lazy workaholic. My desk is like Nedry's desk, as I posted on Facebook earlier. It's just a mess, and she keeps us organized, especially when we get into E3 week, where you tend to lose your mind around day four, and that's why I find she's sort of like, Kim's like very sort of motivated, and it's a good person to have like people. That's why it's easy to like have like 2 hours of free time a week, so
yeah, hence why he was able to like he was like, okay, fine, we'll do a movies podcast, because you know Kim misses it a lot. So we have Movies and Tea, which is you can find that at Movies and Tea Podcast, or is it at Movies and Tea? I can't remember anymore.
I think it's Movies and Tea Pod.
Movies and Tea Pod.
At Movies and Tea Pod.
And it's cool too, because on that series you cover a director, so right now you're covering Paul W.S. Anderson. Yes. On that one, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So we just did the show for Soldier with Kurt Russell.
That was Paul W.S. Anderson?
Yes.
Holy shit. That's awesome.
But he's still, at this point, he's still just listed as Paul Anderson.
Yes. Paul Anderson. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, and then the next one we're tackling is a really big one. So we're doing the whole Resident Evil franchise. The 2 and 3 wasn't directed by him, but we're still pulling it in, because we just want to have a full view of it, of the whole cinematic franchise experience, I guess, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, so who will be the next director you tackle after this guy?
Del Toro.
Nice.
Provisionally, it's Guillermo del Toro. Originally, when we started this, we had a completely different director in mind, and then Kim was like, for some reason, we got into the subject of Event Horizon, and then we both like realized we really like Event Horizon, wanted to talk about that, so Paul W.S. Anderson became our director choice the first season.
Yeah, we had another Anderson in our mind, so that was how it started.
I think it changed. Well, as I've talked to Lackey about before, and in our TV Good Sleep Bad, and it's like Anderson, much like the Wachowskis, his work is really good to reevaluate, and when you certainly pick up on his director trademarks and stuff, it's really, there's some really interesting ideas there. I mean, even if the actual plotting and that may be a little subpar for some tastes, there's definitely some interesting, and certainly visually there's some interesting ideas there, which are really fun when you go into the mind of reevaluating and focusing on sort of like the deeper than sort of the surface level of his films. There's some really interesting stuff there, which has been the surprising part of the project. But a provision at the moment, it's going to be Del Toro will be our next one, I believe, Kim, is that right?
Yes, that is what we're, as long as I can find his earlier films, which I've already started hunting for. So
I love the fact, you're going to talk about Guillermo del Toro for the next episode of Movies and Tea. Very excited to hear about that series. Now, Steven, you are found on Twitter at LPVO.
Another one full of regret, but that's where it is.
Are you a Mexican bandit?
It's something of an obscure moment that happened in my life about 20 years ago that I just thought, oh, Twitter, I'll have a go at this. Oh, LPVO. And now I'm stuck with it. I daily think of changing it, but hey-ho.
Right, and you host, you're part of the Asian Cinema Film Club, which is found on Twitter, at AC Film Club.
It is indeed.
Tell us, sir, anything you want to plug, any new episodes of the Asian Cinema Film Club are coming up, or anything that is on your blog that you want to cover?
Yeah, okay. So so Elwood and I have been doing this for over a year now, which he'd tell me off for saying it's really surprising, because I am, if he thinks he's lazy, I'm even lazier than him.
I think it's more just the fact every blog post opens with, can you believe it? It was on episode 13, it's like, were you expecting the wheel to fall off on the last one?
I do. Every time it's the same. But yes, what usually happens on that is that Elwood and I alternate choices every month. Elwood tends to choose something that's either a classic or a cult film, and then I try and convince him the following month something which is a little more highbrow. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Our last episode we recorded, which I assume will be up fairly soon, was Makoto Shinkai's The Place Promised in Our Early Days, and he's the director of Your Name, and I wanted to introduce Elwood some of his earlier work. But coming up next, Elwood's going to fill in my one of my blind spots in Asian cinema is John Woo. Never really dug any of his stuff, but I think we're going to watch The Killer, aren't we, Elwood?
Yeah. It's already become a rather tense conversation when he's like hard-boiled. So there's certainly going to be some comments made about that. But no, we're watching The Killer, which is really one of the essential Hong Kong action movies from John Woo. It's part of that unofficial trilogy, which is like Better Tomorrow, and then The Killer, and then obviously Hard-Boiled. And also a trilogy of John Woo working with his sort of muse in many ways, Chow Yun-Fat. These are sort of the films that brought them to the attention of like Western audiences, and The Killer, I think, would be the one that would like influence like people like Rodriguez and Tarantino and Johnny To. So I'm looking forward to it.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Outside of that, I guess I am the Asian film guy, because I am on my own blog, which is goelorambling.wordpress.com, which I've been really bad at updating until today. And actually over this week, I've set some reviews up to go. So I'm going to try and get back on top of that with slightly shorter reviews than I used to do. But I've got to put a review up today on Sion Sono's Whispering Star, which was, again, highbrow film. And I also write for EasternKicks.com, which is a UK-based Asian film interview article, news, all about Asian cinema website, which there I don't just do reviews. I also get, I'm very lucky, and I get to interview various Asian directors and actors and actresses on occasion. So I get to stretch different parts of my creative juices.
All right. Well, very cool. Alright, well, I think we got everyone's plugs out of the way, but that is going to wrap up this epic episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. Again, big thanks to everyone here on the show. Big thanks again to Elwood Jones, Daniel Lackey, Kim Blow, and Stephen Palmer. Thank you very much, everyone, for being on here with me. Really appreciate it.
Whoa, we're back now in the present. Wow, that was amazing and strange to go into the past like that, and now we're back here in the present. Wow, technology is strange how we can do that. But no, I really hope you enjoyed that classic episode of Cinema Recall talking about moments in movies, and hopefully we recommended some movies for you that you haven't seen before. So this is the part of the show where I gotta give a shout out to our wonderful Patreon supporters again, patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. I do know that I plan on releasing episodes early before anyone else can hear them, and we're gonna have some fun bonus content as well that'll be coming up here in the months ahead. So big shout out right now to these wonderful cats and kittens. Love them dearly. So no special order. I want to thank Jen McQuaid from Shocked and Applaud. Thank you very much, Jen. Come back. I miss Shocked and Applaud. Please come back. And I also want to give a shout out to Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcast, who's been building a really great empire over there at rabbitholepodcast.com. So big love and support there. Thank you, Jason. I want to give a shout out right now to Donnie Roberts from the Deep Sea Anthologies. Donnie has been a great guest with our Donnie Choice episode. So thank you, Donnie, for helping us out. And I gotta give a shout out to Linda Castro from Bed Knobs and Broom Flits. Thank you very much. Shout right now to Matt and Ashley from Mashley at the Movies. They are wonderful gentlemen. Thank you so much, Matt and Ashley. And then I gotta thank Jeanette Miller Mickenham at AKA Jeanette. And she's gonna be on another episode very shortly here. Well, not shortly here, but soon she'll be back on again. Check her out on our Nate of the Living Dead audio drama. And then lastly, I gotta thank Harvey Andrus, who doesn't have a website, but he gives us money. And I thank you very much for that, Harvey. So thank you very much to all these people. And if you want to be like these amazing people, join us on our Patreon page. Again, patreon.com/CinemaRecallPod. If you listen to us on our main feed, thank you so much. We're available on Good Pods and on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. Please leave us ratings and reviews. It greatly helps the show out. We're also on YouTube as well. And also we're on Newsly. Newsly is an all-in-one audio app for your iOS and Android phone. It puts the most trending articles on the web and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable. Stop scrolling. Start listening. Go to newsly.me. Use the promo code RECALL and get 1 month free of their premium service. Also, check us out every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. on Full Swap Radio's Vanilla Sunday. Again, fullswapradio.com. Yeah, that's the website right there. Okay, that's it. And I'm blanking on something now. Oh, yeah, check our YouTube page because we just posted our audio drama of Clue, which was a lot of fun, a lot of pain to put that shit together. But check us out there as well. All right, that's it. That's all I got to say right now. I love you all very dearly. My head's about to explode, and I'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.